Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Bell Ringers, Investing.com's very own financial podcast where we go over the events of the past week and try to see what will happen in the upcoming weeks to keep you up to date, everything you need to know about the markets in about 20, 25 minutes. My good friend here with me, fellow analyst Jesse Cohen.
What's up, folks? How's it going?
And we'll be here today to discuss a few of the big topics. I think we've had a big developments in the past week. So let's dive right into it. And we'll start with the markets last week.
Well, yeah, obviously we saw markets bounce back a bit on Friday, but still wasn't enough to offset losses for the week. The Dow last week pretty much recorded its fifth straight consecutive decline, which hasn't happened since 2011. So that is something, if you're long this market, perhaps a cause for concern. The S&P and the NASDAQ also fell for the third streak in a row. And it all comes back to Donald Trump, U.S.-China trade war, and the uncertainty, really. Because if up until a few weeks ago we thought a trade deal was imminent, all of a sudden now we're expecting a much longer battle. Even if we do reach a deal, markets have pushed the expectations way back.
Yeah, and I agree, but you know, we're talking about weekly declines, really, and I think the NASDAQ fell about 2.2% last week, but it's still up 15% on the year. So even though we're seeing these declines, you know, the market is still up. I mean, it's in June, it will be the longest economic expansions since the 90s, right? So the economy is going, we have, you know, 50-year low in unemployment. We have the second biggest bull market, you know.
Yeah, but still, I think, like, the data, at least as of late, especially we saw on Friday with the durable goods, a shocking 2.1% drop that came after a report on Thursday showed manufacturing activity falling to a 9-year low. So we could see, really, at least that at the start of the second quarter, the U.S. economy, signs of weakness are starting to emerge. And when taking it all into consideration with the uncertainty created by Trump and the volatility from the U.S.-China trade war, yeah, all of a sudden seeing signs of cracks in the economy.
And I think it's a very interesting market because on the one hand, like I just said, you know, 50-year low in unemployment. But on the other hand, you have some – it's maybe the most conflicted market in terms of you have, you know, certain signals and indicators that maybe a slowdown is coming. And on the other hand, you have some indicators firing on all cylinders. So it's really interesting to see, you know, how the market moves when you have such very good news and very bad news combined. Like, there's no middle right now.
Definitely. Everything seems to be black and white. You know, like you said, if up until a few months ago, there was some gray area where markets could interpret things to be going, you know, on the bullish side or the bearish side. Now it's either this or that.
Yeah, and a word on oil.
Yeah, we saw
$58 a barrel, down 6% on the week, but still up 30% on the year.
Well, I mean, for the most part, last week was a result of really, you know, the fears from the broader markets spilling into other markets. And in addition to oil and commodities, we saw some panic buying in treasuries as well, which fell to their lowest level since 2017. So all in all, a lot of
very conflicted market.
Absolutely.
Very conflicted market.
That obviously leads us into perhaps the second biggest, what influenced the markets last week was really the Fed minutes, which came out on Wednesday. I noticed that the word patient or patience appeared 9 times in the 11 pages of text. So if the Fed was really trying to, push a message.
We're not going to do anything yet.
We're sitting on our hands. We're patient. Don't worry, folks. No rate cuts, no rate hikes. Now, with that being said, the minutes of that meeting the meeting itself was 3 days before we got the latest blow up in the U.S.-China trade battle. So you kind of have to take, you know, the there was some mild optimism in there, which I think if the Fed had known what was going to happen in a few days' time,
yeah, I agree,
perhaps would have toned down that optimism a bit. Really, what's shocking to me is the reaction in the Fed funds futures market, which as shown according to Investing.com's Fed Rate Monitor tool, all of a sudden it's not just 2 rate cuts that
it's
the market
three.
Is pricing in. We're starting to price in 3 rate cuts,
yeah.
And already the first one would be this October. So you know, 6 months time, we're looking at a rate cut that markets are pricing in, followed by another rate cut in January 2020.
Yeah.
So who's wrong here? Obviously, the markets are pricing in one thing. The Fed is really, really keen
saying another
on
thing.
Signaling another thing.
But then again, I read the minutes And you could see that there are dissenting voices when it comes to what we should do with the inflation. Because while Powell is pushing the transitory narrative and saying that, you know, we're okay, it's just short-term things, I think that there are people,
there are definitely some members on the board
Fed
there
that don't think the same way. And inflation is projected under 2% in the medium term. Some people are even calling for, you know, projecting under 2% in the long term, which would be alarming. And under 2% for the long term would really maybe justify a rate cut.
Absolutely.
You know? And the question is, how much do we sacrifice from maybe the Fed's, you know, kind of toolbox, because you know, rate cuts and hikes are kind of a tool that the Fed uses. And how much do we want to do this for inflation? If everything else looks fine, do we rate cut for inflation?
I mean, in my opinion, we'll cut rates to support markets quicker than we'll cut rates to boost inflation
expectations. Well, kind of the way it's been in the past decade.
I mean, there's a hidden third mandate for the Fed, and that is support
Wall Street.
Keep the market high.
Keep the market high.
Keep the market elevated. And, you know, if we start seeing a rocky summer and really some volatility in September, October, then obviously that could lead to a much different message from the Fed in the months to come.
Right, and I think that we have a PCE reading this week as well. So if we have some inflation data coming up, so we'll be sure to turn into investing.com to check the numbers out. And our third topic, how can we not talk about this? Theresa May, resignating from the Prime Minister office of Britain.
It finally happened. It finally happened.
We talked about it a lot.
We were talking about Brexit. I mean, back when we first kicked off the podcast, I think Brexit was featured on almost every episode.
We had an unaired pilot where we literally rambled for 20 minutes on Brexit.
Now, being that we finally got the major shoe to drop here, Theresa May finally resigned. The pound, really, we saw in its reaction just a minor, really knee-jerk, minor blip. So you have to ask yourself, what has really changed here for the pound? What has really changed here for Brexit? And I think in terms of what the market has priced in, what we saw with the pound, it's not much.
Well, for me, Theresa May was maybe the worst person to lead the UK towards Brexit.
How can you ask someone who voted Remain to
lead, you know, so of course you're not going to bring a deal that no one likes. That's exactly what you're going to do, and that's exactly what happened. So Theresa May, to me, whether we're going to end up with a no-deal Brexit or not, you know, she just delayed the inevitable of her leaving and letting someone else really apply, because, you know, someone who actually believes in it.
Basically.
And I remember we talked about Boris Johnson, which was inconceivable for him to become prime minister a short while ago.
He's the front runner. He's a front runner, all right. And if it were up to him, a hard Brexit is coming on October 31st. You know, if we get a deal or no deal, a Brexit is coming. That's what he said. The question is, can he garner the support of his party? Can he garner support, you know, from the broad general public, and really be the one to lead the UK, you know, down this road?
I think the road that the UK is on is almost impossible to navigate right now. So even if Theresa May, you know, was not the right person, I mean, she was the worst person, but I'm not sure the right person even exists. And that's my problem with the UK right now, you know?
Well, Let's put it this way. I think Boris Johnson might be the best option when taking, you know, like Dominic Raab is considered
the best option for what? The best option for a no deal Brexit. But then for markets are not gonna appreciate a no deal Brexit.
With all due respect to the markets, the UK general public made a choice in June 2016.
Right, and it's their consequences to bear, my friend. Don't get me wrong.
Exactly. And finally, on the UK side, we have someone who's willing to go down that road. The EU side, we still don't have someone that way. So, which in my opinion just increases the odds of a hard Brexit.
I think the odds of a hard Brexit are above 50% at this point.
I think that could be a base case scenario, you know, by now. An upside surprise would be if we get some sort of compromise.
I think a delay, you know, beyond October 31st is actually likely. But, you know, I think that right now no deal is likelier than a deal.
Well,
all right, let's move on to markets next week.
Well, yeah. We'll look into, obviously, markets are closed Monday in the U.S. It's a Memorial Day, so it'll be a short week. In my opinion, what will move markets the most? More headlines and more tweets. It's been that type of market for the past 2, 3, 4 weeks even. You know, Trump wakes up in the morning, tweets, you know, we're going to ban Huawei, markets crash. Trump wakes up in the morning, we're like, well, maybe
I just bought a Huawei phone, and market's up 10%.
Because on Friday, what it was, you know, the change in rhetoric, you know, he was like, well, maybe we can include Huawei in the trade deal, you know, which is something that markets, it's a theory that Trump right now is, you know, kind of building up his leverage on the Chinese. He's going to ban Huawei. They're looking into blacklisting more Chinese tech companies. And then that will set up the scenario that when Trump and Xi finally meet at the end of June, apparently, Trump will come in and be like, yo, Xi, what's up, my man? Maybe we could work on the Huawei deal.
But Xi is flexing as well. And he just went to visit a rare earth minerals plant not long ago. Yeah. And we've seen how semiconductors
reacted. Apple last week fell 5.5%. The semis,
So it's not like the Chinese don't have a say in it. Like, the amount of materials needed to actually provide for our more modern lifestyle. Today would be very hard to sustain the West modern lifestyle without China.
That goes without saying, for sure. It's a high stakes battle here. Both sides are you know, it's only a matter of time until China responds to the Huawei ban. And speculation in the market, obviously, is Apple. You know, will Beijing go against Apple and its products? Because right now, Apple's been the poster boy for all these, Tim Cook warned about revenue in China, Apple stock dropped. So in a way, Apple has turned into like this proxy in addition to these semiconductors.
Well, Apple Huawei.
Apple Huawei,
That's the American counterpart in a way. But a trade deal, like, do you think it's likely that just as the trade deal fell apart, somehow they'll pull something together and make a surprise announcement that some kind of agreement? Like, do you think we'll see it coming, really? Because there's a lot of things that I think this market that we don't see things coming.
I think, like you said, Trump, for the most part, has bypassed the traditional process of, you know, leaking to the media or leaking to your preferred journalist. Right now, like, Trump is the media. Trump is his own journalist. If he's got some news to break, he'll go out there and break it himself. And, you know, tweets, algos are reading tweets. So you have it's a whole new market dynamic.
Yeah, so what do you think? Where do you think we end the week? We're trading sideways for the next week until something comes along?
We'll get a glimmer of hope on some sort of resolution. I think Trump will tone down the trade rhetoric, and I think we'll possibly get an upside surprise on GDP data that comes out on Wednesday. We'll probably get some I'm looking for a bounce back this week. After 5 down weeks for the Dow, I think this will be the week that it'll break the streak.
I think we still seesaw, and I think we'll move 3-4% up, 3-4% down. Like, I see the coming week as being some kind of, you know, positive news, negative news, positive news, negative news. I see the cycle continuing.
The roller coaster continuing. Yep.
Yeah, in next next week.
And we've seen that in investing.com traffic numbers. Volatility definitely helping out.
Yeah, for sure. So our second topic is Facebook. So for two reasons, really. The first one is the shareholder meeting on Thursday, which will be interesting because there are many proposals for many independent shareholders that want Mark Zuckerberg not to be the chairman of the board and the CEO anymore.
Yeah, just strip his role and kind of divide that position into two.
But the funny thing is that he has the power to prevent it,
veto all of this
single-handedly. So how do you come out of this situation?
Facebook as an ecosystem is, you know, it's run by one person. the god of Facebook is Mark Zuckerberg. You know, whatever he says goes. If he decides, you know what, let me appease the shareholders a bit here, and I'll do this. And you see, at the end of the day, he can make, you know, his own set of rules here, and really no one can really, you know, dictate anything to him.
Because
he is the majority shareholder.
Of course.
And the way the voting rights are manipulated, whatever he says goes.
But you have to take into account that every investor in Facebook kind of accepted the situation as they became shareholders.
I think there's a lot
the voting structure was known, and if you didn't want a company run by Mark Zuckerberg, then you shouldn't have invested in Facebook.
That's true. That's true. But it definitely seems right now the backlash is growing, and already there's speculation in both in social media and in business circles that the majority of the big shareholders of Facebook are on the same page here in terms of trying to limit Zuckerberg's power and trying to really, make changes to the social network.
So Thursday might be a volatile day for Facebook, depending on the news that come out. Because even if Zuckerberg has to veto, if something would have passed without him, and if they garner, good support among, shareholders.
Absolutely.
That would signal problems in Facebook going forward.
Absolutely. And really, I think, the sentiment in general is really to break up a lot of these Silicon Valley companies too big. If 10 years ago the banks were too big to fail, it seems as if right now big tech is too big to fail.
And I think that there's a possibility where Zuckerberg just accepts the fact and just steps down kind of willingly, without using the power that he has, because using the power that you have to veto that right now,
you don't want
to shareholders. It's just oil, it's just gasoline on the fire.
You don't want to battle with the shareholders right now. As a CEO, we see what a controversial CEO, looking at Tesla, for example.
Exactly.
I think Zuckerberg, if anything, he'll agree to go out, or willingly, voluntarily make some changes at least.
Yeah. And for our third segment, since we're done with earnings, we're going with a segment that we call the Stock of the Week, where we both come up with a stock. We both talk about it for a minute and a half. We have a short discussion. So you want to start?
I'll kick it off. Yeah. Well, like I said, done with earnings, not entirely done with the peak of earnings season, because my Stock of the Week, Costco, reports earnings on Thursday after the bell. Markets are looking for 182 per share earnings on revenue of $34.6 billion. So that would be up from earnings of $1.70 per share and sales of $32.3 billion, same quarter a year earlier. So what I like a lot about Costco is that it has proven, or at least until now, has proven to be Amazon-proof. It's one of the only stocks in the retail sector that so far, Amazon really hasn't managed to crush. In terms of the stock itself, it's up 20% this year, whereas as opposed to other sectors or other stocks in the retail sector, which like we saw last week with Nordstrom's and JCPenney, for example,
and
they all plunged.
I think that, when you go against Amazon, the biggest retailers might have, the easiest time going against it. And we're talking about Walmart that went really low and managed to rebound as it grew its online sales. We're talking about Costco that, it was kind of the rumor was that Amazon was going to take over, but the news, is actually pretty positive and they're continuing to grow.
I think for Costco, really, what's most impressive is really their business model has in the retail sector might be the best model
it's
in
unique.
All of retail.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's membership-only warehouse, so it creates a long-lasting, loyal membership base.
For sure.
And really, what excites me lately is they're showing real signs of, breaking into the scene in terms of online sales. So I'm looking for a positive earnings report from them on Thursday, and I think the uptrend will continue in terms of the stock price.
All right, cool. So I'll move on to my stock of the week, which is Baidu. And it's inspired by a very nice discussion I've had on Twitter, where I posted that in 2014, Baidu had $8 billion in revenue, $2.1 billion in profit, and a market cap of about $80 billion. Whereas in 2019, it has $15 billion in revenue, so almost double, $4.1 billion in profit, so almost double, but half the market cap, which is 40. And of course, when we're talking about Baidu, we're talking at a stock that was priced for growth, really. And people saw it as the next Google, taking over internet
Absolutely.
In China. So of course, it would make sense for it to be priced highly. And now that, it hasn't performed as well, I think it reported its first quarterly loss in about 15 years since it went public. It's the first time that they report a quarterly loss. So, of course, people are very distraught by that. But something important to know about Baidu, and it came up in that Twitter conversation, is that Baidu has about $15 billion in equity of other companies right now.
Right.
$12 billion in net cash. So that's a loan. is $27 billion, right? Out of a $40 billion market cap, that's $27 accounted for. Plus, it has autonomous driving that it needs to spin off. Plus, its cloud offering is actually growing at a rate of 130% year over year. So Baidu is very interesting right now just because of that. Because on the one hand, it's really beaten down, but that's exactly what I like to pick up stocks. And that's exactly my sweet spot.
I wrote about Baidu last week in my stock sector piece for investing.com, where I took a look at the three biggest names in China and how they fared in the first quarter. I gave Baidu an F. I think there was a shocking decline there in their core ad sale business. I think they missed the boat, both in terms of being the next Google of in China. Tencent are eating their lunch. Alibaba are eating their dinner. JD.com are eating, in terms of the competition for Baidu, I think there's a lot better options elsewhere, especially in China.
I think the price is good enough to take a swing on this one.
Well, we saw it really collapse. It was up at 280 just a few months ago. It hit 114 on Friday. So real ugly price action.
Yeah, it sounds like, maybe not now pouncing time, because again, you don't want to trade against the long-term trend.
Especially but with the U.S.-China trade news, just like
I do see a lot of opportunities and underpriced opportunities in Baidu right now. All right, so that wraps it up for this week. Thanks for being with us every week. I'm Clément Thibault, my good friend Jesse Cohen. And have a nice Memorial Day weekend.
May the trading gods be with you. Enjoy the weekend. And see you all back here next week.
Right,
thanks for listening.
Have a good one, everyone.